Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure of being joined by Andy Bruce of Softools, who I've known for 22, 23 years. Andy, is that?
Yeah, I think that is. Back to our days at Henley.
Yeah. You don't look old enough now. You're still looking better than me. So very pleased that you can join us. Maybe you could briefly introduce yourself and Softools. We got some context on that for the discussion.
Yeah, definitely. So Andy Bruce, yeah, my background is in as a mechanical engineer for a number of years, but actually for the last 25 years, I've been working with business processes really in three capacities. So firstly, as a consultant, training consultant around business process re-engineering, going back to the days of Michael Hamel. And then I spent a couple of years writing a number of business books about different business processes, from strategy to project management to looking at the different ways in people think. And it wasn't at the top, the highest strategic level. It was just looking at the basic tools and techniques and putting them into a format that people could use. And then we extended that into the software side. So, and really for the last 10 years or so, it's been looking at how do we take best practices and embed them into the ways in which people work on a day-to-day basis, into the DNA of the business.
Right.
That really led to the formation of Softools.
Yeah, and what I've admired of Softools over the years, and we've worked together on various projects and sort of stuff like that, is about how you focus, I think, on the business and the process bit, not about the computing side and the coding sort of side. You know, our connection at Henley sort of came when I was doing my MBA, and I did my MBA thesis on business benefits of SAP. And unfortunately, businesses spend a lot of time doing the coding of the process re-engineering rather than actually changing the processes. But what I've liked about Softools is how you sort of do your no coding sort of computing. Can you explain that on why that's a mind shift change and how you work?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of points there. I think the first one is that I work with a number of companies where they were using bits of software which just weren't fit for purpose. And you can't help think, well, why was that? And it was primarily because they were built by some very good developers, but those developers didn't understand the business process. So when we set up Softools, one of our primary objectives was to create a bit of software where the subject matter expert could actually take responsibility for seeing the software through from the initial scoping right the way through to implementation. And that's the principle of no code. Now, I know it's become low code, no code is very popular now, but we've been doing it for the last 15 years or so. And we do differentiate very heavily between low code and no code. So low code will be tools that help the IT team to get faster. No code is really putting the power and the control in the hands of the consultant or the local subject matter expert.
Yeah, and certainly we've used your platforms for innovation, idea generation, innovation sort of process, sort of flow and sort of stuff like that. That's relatively straightforward, but it's been straightforward for the organizations and that we've used. So could you give us an example from a process improvement sort of type example of clients and that you worked with and how you could bring disparate organizations together?
Yeah, certainly. And if we think about the companies we work with, they do range from some of the world's largest organizations like KPMG in France and Grupo Bimbo in Mexico. We do a lot of work with Honda in Europe, but Coca-Cola globally is one of our principal clients. Now, with all of these organizations, one of the challenges I have is they're running business processes in Excel or on bits of paper. And in the modern world, that's not good enough. They're not secure. They're not scalable enough, and they're not consistent. So that's typically the business problem. And every leader of any business you talk to will say, yeah, we're using too much Excel. Great for finance and for the accounting side, but for the business process side, that's not good. Simple example, the example I always like to reflect on is we had a fascinating client in Japan, Coca-Cola bottlers in Japan. They have 6,000 people across their supply chain side. And when we first joined them, I started working with them, they were running the whole of their Kaizen process on bits of Excel. And what that meant was that every person in their business needed to submit one idea every month. And to do this, they just create another Excel spreadsheet, which they sent into this central team of five. So effectively, by the end of the year, you had 70,000+ Excel spreadsheets. They had a full-time team of 5 people who were then doing nothing but consolidate that information. Now, in amongst that lot, there were some good ideas, but they weren't being replicated. And so it was an administrative nightmare. So they'd solved the cultural problem, but how could we use a modern no-code platform to make that process scalable, secure, much faster, but also allow that central team to do really what they needed to do, which was to identify the best practices and proactively replicate that across the business.
So that's great way of sort of bringing together data, improving the processes, and putting that sort of into a system. Now, one of the topics that I really want to discuss with you in this session is artificial intelligence. Now, back, so when we first met back end of the 90s, I was doing my MBA and I started my business, which was around how do corporates engage in new technologies? And it was Netscape and Mosaic, and it was the .com. Now, over the last few months, I've seen artificial intelligence and lots of people seeing ChatGPT. My feeling now is we're on the verge of something that's even bigger than what I felt I was on the verge of in 2000. So I'd be interested in exploring that with you. How are you seeing artificial intelligence for data improvements, improving processes, and sort of things like that? How are you seeing it now, Andy?
Well, I would totally agree with you. I think we're looking at a step change, and I think we're looking at a step change right away across the business. So I think when we reflect on it, for us, we look back 6 months, and the stuff that we can do now is completely different to what it was even 6 months ago. So we really are seeing this exponential ramp up in terms of what this technology can do. The question then is, well, what do you do with it, and how do you implement it in the business? I think for a lot of companies, they're confused in terms of what should their objectives be, not sure about how to use AI. And I think one of the key messages and why we work a lot with organizations is that you cannot use AI capability if your information is on bits of paper, or if your information is in Excel. You want good data quality, as you say. So actually, one of the earliest uses that you can get of some of the new AI models is to make sure data is complete and it's reasonable quality. A simple example, working with a standards institute in the UK, they're responsible for tracking medical equipment from all over the world. Where they have an issue that's reported in, those issues need to be classified. And what they discovered there was that a very significant number of those issues had an incorrect classification. So can we use AI to understand the model, create the model, and then apply it to that data so actually we can validate the classification is right? And once we've got that, we can then start to do stuff with it. But that's almost, for me, that's almost level one. And that's just the basics. Get the data into a digitized format. So move from paper and Excel onto a digital platform. Use AI to improve the quality and completeness. Another organization we work with, they've been capturing improvement initiatives over the last 5-year period, but it's only in the last year that they've been applying classification data. So can we retrospectively look back at the previous 4 years, apply that classification data historic data? Yes, is the simple answer. But now we've done the basics, it feels like now we're just being given an opportunity to really do and fulfill the potential of what AI can deliver. So if we stay with the Kaizen example, everybody in that business was expected to create one improvement idea every month. Now, the reality is that they were creating ideas, but often they weren't having an impact on business performance. And because the ideas just weren't particularly significant or relevant or related to the strategy. So what we did was to bolt on or to link into ChatGPT. Now, at the time, I think it was version 3, then it was 3.5, and we're about to introduce 4. I mean, the speed at which it's improving is dramatic. And what we're able to do now is to ask everybody once a month just to identify some kind of local challenge. What's the problem statement? They put the problem statement in, and within 5 seconds, we actually get 5 to 10 ideas from industry, from best practices in terms of how that could be addressed. Everything from a leaky pipe. And I look at the 10 suggested ideas, and first 2 or 3, I think, well, they're obvious. And then the next, I'm thinking, not so obvious. And so, as a subject matter expert, you might know them. But But I hadn't even thought about the last three. So that has a double impact. Number one, it fundamentally changes the quality of the outputs, but also on a one-on-one basis, it's educating every member of that business on a day-to-day basis. So learning the point of doing, which is a really hot buzzword at this point in time. So huge potential impact.
So just connecting a couple of things there that I've sort of seen. I've used GPT, and I've had those wow moments as well. Everything from doing some simple poetry for Burns Night to thinking about a journey to one of the businesses I work with, coming up with an investment strategy and thoughts of how we get investment from a particular region and a particular type of investor. And as you said, you know, after about three or four questions and interactions with it, it's giving you very different sort of insights. What I'm interested in as well from knowing softwares and what you just talked about, cleaning data, how are you seeing we bring those two things together? Because if you bring in this, if you enhance the data that you've got within your business by helping to sort it and categorize it, are you finding that you can delve into that to see insights that you hadn't seen before and then look into the outside world? So as you said, you could, maybe you've got some data about, oh, we've got leaks in these different factories that we wouldn't have known about unless we analyze the data in a more rigorous way. And as you said, there's answers out there in the internet or in the data that GPT has got. How do you get those things to work together? Please explain how that's working.
Yeah, definitely. So I think the first question there is, what state's our data in? And we've always said, you've really got to get it into a digitized format in a single database. Now, once you've done that, you can then use some of the emerging AI models to then cluster and reclassify that data. So we may be, for example, looking at operational data and using a model called the 8 Wastes. But actually, it may be much more appropriate to reclassify that data in a different way, perhaps according to the process that each of the ideas relates to or each of the issues relates to. Now, that in itself is quite interesting because that's telling us actually we're doing a lot of work in the area of, let's say, packaging, but we're not doing anything in the area of, let's say, logistics. So we can then start with that insight, we can then start to proactively prompt people to look at different areas and focus on different things. But I think the another element of AI isn't to immediately jump to looking outside the business and generating these ideas using ChatGPT, for example. But actually, it is once you've got the data in a digitized format, once you've got it classified, you can then much, much more easily start to look for patterns inside the business so we can see systemic issues. So instead of, let's say you've got 200 plants in your business, instead of dealing with individual issues in individual plants, we can identify systemic issues. And then that central team, rather than just consolidate bits of paper and Excel, they can proactively then go out and take the solutions and push them into the other plants. So replicating those solutions. So suddenly you get a multiplier effect on those solutions going out there. But also, as the user is typing, they type their problem statement in and they hit the cursor, the enter button, or I should say they're talking to the computer, they're dictating to their mobile phone. The AI can automatically look at the database. Because it's digitized, we can now compare that problem statement with every other problem statement that we've had. We can compare some of the metadata, some of the descriptive data, and identify other areas where we've seen the same issue before, we've had the same risk before, and therefore we can then pull those solutions into us. So rather than identify the problem state and then think hard and write down what I think, actually we can see what's worked elsewhere and can I reuse that? So I think that's also, it's using internal knowledge, internal data, once we've got it complete, once we've got it structured.
And we can see applications in all sorts of industries. You've talked about bottling examples and process improvement, but you know, I've used it for helping to diagnose a health issue. I felt it, you know, and it came up with a much better solution than me trying to do a Google search, trying to find an NHS leaflet down in Brighton, which was absolutely terrible. You know, the overview of the symptom and the solution and the recommendations and all that, ChatGPT put out in a better format, but I validated it on the NHS website, but it was so difficult to get there. I think we'll see it in medical, legal cases.
Yes.
We'll see it in consulting. We'll see it in investment, which is an area of, with Henley Business Angels. I used it recently with looking at some of the ventures that we're pitching. So I think we're going to see the principle that you're talking about, taking data, getting insights from it, getting different perspectives and that. Are you also seeing, I guess the next step would be an automatic, the computer would just go ahead and do it. So, in a medical case or in a law case or sort of something like that, it looks at the data and it automatically sends the email to say, oh, right, this is the solution, or you're infringing my trademark, or your coding is wrong, or your homework is wrong. What sort of automatic things are you? Do you think you're going to see that are going to enhance what people do or improve a productivity?
Yeah, well, I think a bit of a mixture of all of the above, really. So I think when we see its use cases, I think you see a static use case, which is where you take a body of knowledge and you're using an AI model on a database of information and knowledge. But actually, if you then build that into the dynamic process, then as people are typing, then the AI engine can be operating on that knowledge, and it can either be giving information back to the user. For example, that's not a good way to write a risk statement. So it could either be feeding back to the individual, but certainly it could be then triggering other activities using workflow. And I think for me, I smile because I look at our own business, and it's been fascinating to see not only how we're implementing AI for our clients, but we look internally at our business, and potentially one in every three of our processes will change. So the other day, we had just released a bit of code, or it was ready to be released. We have testers who would automatically test the code, and instead of using them, we put it into the AI model, and it made three or four suggested changes, at which point our senior developer was suddenly feeling quite threatened and thinking, I wasn't expecting the challenge to come from there. And actually, it was all a very good challenge, for sure. But also, we're seeing that with what we're creating in terms of a no-code platform, the SoftTools App Studio of the future will allow users like you and me with no coding knowledge whatsoever to build an application just by talking to the PC. And that's not 4 years away. That's not a year away. That will be about 4 to 6 weeks away. I mean, it's unbelievable how quickly it's changing.
Yeah.
And then you get into that every other aspect of the business. Take marketing, for example. Writing blogs, you want to write 8 blogs for LinkedIn over an 8-week period. Actually, you can now do that in 1 hour, whereas it used to perhaps take the best part of a day. And probably the grammar and the spelling is better coming out of the AI model. So I think there's a huge amount of potential there. And at the same time, of course, we have to recognize that not everybody's comfortable with change. So I think there's a journey that some people will feel much more comfortable than others. But if they don't go on that journey, if our clients do not embrace this, they will not be competitive and their competitors will win market share. So that's the challenge. It's not going to go away. It is a massive step change. It is threatening to some people. And we just have to embrace it and talk about it openly and what's right for us, what's right for our clients.
Yeah, I think you brought it together really well there. And as I outlined in my recent book, it's about what I term innovative new value chains. We're going to have to plug in these technologies and think about them as new processes. It's not just about, some of these things can slot into your current processes to improve it. But as you sort of said, this can radically change the value chain that we're talking about. And that requires a lot more thought for individuals, for companies, and for society. I think you're very right there.
Yeah.
Good. Andy, it's been a pleasure catching up with you. Great insights on that again. And look forward to seeing you down in Henley and on the Thames.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, pleasure as always.
Please give a 5-star like and subscribe to future podcasts.